from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm here with Dusty Rhodes, and this is not just another episode. This is the 50th episode of Cleats and Cufflinks.
It's been a while.
It has been quite a while. This show has come and gone, had its ups and downs, its changes in personnel. I feel like we've been pretty consistent of late for the most part as we've approached this 50th episode. Up until, of course, last week. We were supposed to do episode 50 last week. And, you know, I can tell from the massive outcry from people all over the world that that us missing that date was very traumatic. But we had a good excuse, I would say.
I did get asked about it at the games I was at last weekend. Did I miss the Cleats and Cufflinks this week? Well, yes.
Yes. Yes, you did.
You missed it because I missed it. Yeah. Because as I was attempting to commute down to Philadelphia, a deer ran into the side of my car.
Yeah.
Not the front, the side.
Drivers or passenger?
Drivers.
Drivers. Yeah. So he was after you specifically.
So I'm not sure. So
we're sure this was a deer and not ally of the Portland Stags.
I got a nice up close look at the deer because the deer ran into the fender area.
Yeah.
And then there was deer snot and slobber all over the windshield.
Yeah, yeah.
So took out side of the sort of the front, and it's a plastic car. It's a Saturn. So it's metal on the inside, but plastic on the outside. So those panels just kind of broke apart.
Broke apart.
And I assume they absorbed a lot of the damage. The car's still drivable. I'm all right. Wasn't even shooken up. Shaken up.
Shaken up.
I'm not a shook one. I'm not worried.
Stirred.
About it. So the deer did not stay near the side of the road. It went away somewhere else to deal with its own pain.
Yeah, which must have been substantial.
Yeah, I assume so, because the car was unhappy and so was I, and the deer could not have been pleased with the result of that.
But it took off. So who knows? We're gonna be optimistic, say that the deer is living happily with its woodland friends.
That's one way to go.
Yeah.
In the Pennsylvania wilderness, it might also be venison steak.
It might be nourishing its woodland friends. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody else came out all right, but it was a little surprising. It made it so that I couldn't travel quite as easily.
Yeah, so rather than attempt the kind of technological feats for which we are not renowned.
I personally am sort of a Luddite.
And I'm not. You have been accused of that.
Yeah, I'm not easy to communicate via phone or video camera or any of those. Text. I like text.
Text. We should have done a text
episode. Hard to do a podcast via text.
That could have been fun. We could have done a Twitter episode.
Or
just all on Twitter.
Could have had somebody else. I could have texted in to someone and they could have read out my words,
which would
have
been a trip. That's not bad. All right. I kind of like that. All right. We have ideas for the future.
So I'm mobile again. Yeah, I'm happy to be back.
Mobile again and back. And today, back on the show, wearing, I believe, a summer league jersey, I'm going to guess.
Heck yes.
What's the team here?
This is the Ray Guns. This is from the Mercer County Ultimate Disc League, the McCuddle. And they have a draft league and they have an A league. The draft league you draft, obviously.
Yep,
the A league, you pick your own teams, pick your own teammates, and then go in with a team. This is from 2003 or 2004, which was, I believe, the first and last iteration of the Ray Guns.
Hmm.
Had a bunch of our
just former, a 1 year.
Yeah, had a bunch of our former Pike teammates on there. We were all right, but we were like all the young people that couldn't get on the good teams.
Gotcha.
So I'm wearing this in part because I got to play my first summer league game this year last night. And instead of playing with the Ray Guns, who no longer exist, I was playing with Roots of Rhythm.
And how's the soreness today?
My calves are displeased with me. I had an ill-timed layout at some point, which is not the reason my calves are sore. And it was only ill-timed because I didn't get the disc, and my guy threw a goal right after that.
That is kind of the definition.
To be fair, it was an open-side goal, so I may not have prevented him from doing anything anyway.
Point is,
we won, got some quality players on the rest of the team, and I'm really just there to fill in the completions so that they can all do the fancy things.
Yeah, you guys run around, I'll do some throwing kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I got to move around a little bit.
You're not that old yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet.
It's on its way. But it's good to get out and run again. I I hadn't been able to play any Ultimate since Fool's Fest, which was the first weekend of April.
That will happen when you work at the MLU.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of Ultimate. Very little of it will you be allowed to play.
My weekends are all gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not a complaint, but I'm happy to play some weeknight Frisbee now.
Yeah. I've been playing as well, though I missed a game last night. I had to go to New York for some meetings, missed that. So I don't think my team missed me much. My wife still played, so they were fine.
Right. She has a reputation for being a quality player.
Yeah, with crazy eyes, apparently, is what people say. Crazy eyes.
I also have the crazy eyes, but usually when I'm away from Frisbee, Frisbee calms me down a little bit.
Yeah, well, we're going to get you playing more then.
So I was accused of having crazy eyes back when I was a GM during the games. I was just totally stressed out.
Very intensely stressed out.
Not good for me.
all right. Well, before we jump into the bulk of our show here, we're going to open up something from our sponsor, Heavy Seas Brewing Company. Thank you very much for Heavy Seas. They're supporting the show in a number of ways, but most significantly in terms of libations. This is a special.
It is
a special one. Given the. The pomp and circumstance one needs to present around a 50th show.
It's a celebration.
We have Plank 4 here. So you want to tell everybody about Plank 4?
Sure.
I'm going to let you do the talking.
Plank 4 is a garnet-hued Belgian-style quad aged on planks of retified poplar, retified cherry, Jamaican allspice, and Cuban cedar. Notes of plum, raisin, and dates abound, combined with a mysterious woody complexity. So.
Serious.
The only criticism I have here is that we're using the MLU pint glasses.
Yes.
It's not technically the correct set of glassware for this particular beverage.
No, certainly not.
But the pint glass is the more generally accepted glass in beer circles, at least in America at this point. So we'll be drinking some out of the Stags and the White Cups here, two of the teams that have qualified for the playoffs. And we'll be seeing them in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference. But first, we'll be drinking out of their clear manifestations.
Yeah, I mean, we're stuck with this up until the point where we get those MLU beer
Cheers.
Chalices that we all have been waiting for.
Something else to drink out of. Always good.
Oh, that is a tasty and complex beverage. Plank 4. From Heavy Seas Brewing Company, check it out. And it was, as always, before we get any further along, enjoy your Heavy Seas beer responsibly. Particularly this one, it's strong. You'll notice I only poured Dusty and I a child-sized portion today because this is on the stronger side.
That's good, though. I'm struggling to separate out the different types of wood. It's all sort of woody all at once.
Well, if you nice retify the wood, it just blends together. We found out that retifying is treating the wood with heat to make it stronger.
Essentially. I'm not sure.
There's complexities in there that work.
Well, the issue is I'm not sure why you would do that for the beer, because then doesn't the beer interact with the wood less?
I'm not
a brewer.
I have no idea.
Nor a beer.
We'll send that question. Andy Parker, if you're listening, we have questions for you.
Nor a beer cooperer? Go ahead and build the barrels?
He's a cooperer. That's does the barrel work. All right, so let's jump into what we got here. We get some game action from this week that we need to talk about. So we've gotten to the end of week 9 of MLU action, and we basically know what's up now for the most part. So we know what teams are going to be in the playoffs. The thing that we don't know yet is where those playoff games are going to be held, though they're, in both cases, on both coasts, are pretty strong indications of the location.
Yeah. It looks like it'll probably be in Philadelphia and in Portland. However, that could change. If Seattle wins the rest of their games and Portland loses the rest of their games, it would be in Seattle. Because Seattle is down a tiebreak, so if they finish tied, Portland would still host.
Yep.
So they'd have to actually finish with more wins. And that would include beating Portland in the last game of the regular season in Portland, I believe, although it could be in Seattle. Either way, they face off in the last weekend, and then they'll face each other again the very next week in the Western Conference Championship.
Yep.
So that's always an interesting game to watch, but
it seems unlikely that Seattle's going to be able to do that, particularly given the performance of San Francisco and Vancouver this past weekend, which was not what you would call particularly strong.
Yeah, and if we look at the numbers here, Seattle beat San Francisco 20-12, and Portland beat Vancouver 27-10. Oof. And if you add those up, it's a 47-22 difference. That's really just, like, in the West, it's very clear that we have two teams on the top and two teams on the bottom.
Yes.
And that's the way it works sometimes. Those teams aren't without their positive things going into next year, which we've talked about a little bit for both of
plenty
them.
Plenty of positives.
But for this season, it's not good results.
Yeah.
And there's no nice way to put that.
So San Francisco is going to come up and they're going to try to play, spoiler for one or the other, because they're playing both teams this weekend.
Yeah.
But basically, I think that, you know, even from a league perspective, we're expecting a playoff game in Portland.
Yeah.
Now,
that doesn't necessarily
mean that Portland's going to win. Portland has had a playoff game in Portland in the last 2 years.
Yeah. And they've lost to Vancouver 2 years ago, and they lost to Seattle last year.
Yeah.
And in both those scenarios, it's the sort of thing that sticks in the back of your mind as a player, which can be trying.
Yeah, it's really going to take, you know, I'd like to see Portland finish the season strong going into that, really not, you know, taking any time off, not sitting back on this, because they need that energy going into that playoff game. I think they're going to benefit from the fact that the playoff game is the literal next week.
Yeah.
After the end of the season, so the season ends on the 18th. And the next weekend is the playoffs. So I think that'll benefit. There's no, like, lag. There's no time to, like, take your foot off the gas. But Seattle plays better and better as seasons go on. And
started adding some players on.
Yeah.
They're starting to hit their stride a little bit here.
They're definitely going to be dangerous.
I'll say that I'm kind of rooting for Portland to get to the championship game, not because of anything other than they're the only Western Conference team not to play in the championship game so far.
Which is actually kind of crazy. 4 years, we could have four different teams coming out from the West. It's that kind of democratic approach to competition that makes the MLU so special.
I think I used that in one of the games this past weekend.
You did. Your brother called you out on Twitter. I think you called the Philly offense that you called democratic?
Yeah, both Philly and Boston really seem to spread their offenses around.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot of players who are really high in the overall statistics in the league. Whereas you look at Portland and they just, like, you look at Purston and Bjorklund and Woodside and they're just dominating these various statistical categories.
Yeah, I mean, Purston has 100 goals, Bjorklund has 100 assists, and that's not counting the goals or assists that either.
Right.
And, you know, we just had Nick Kiernan on the Spinners who gets a lot of touches. He just hit the 100-point mark, meaning 100 combined goals and assists. So you can see how Portland has a very focused and kind of offense.
You know, you use the players that you have. Although in the past, both the Spinners and the Whitecaps have had specific players that they've relied on more or less than in other seasons. If you look at Josh Marquette, if you look at Jeff Graham, if you look even going further back, they've found these specific players and then used them. And the same thing has been true of the Spinners. You look at the way Rainwater has played. You looked at the way that they previously had focused in on Hiranet getting 1,000 touches per game or whatever. And it's the same thing with DC. It's just what you use, what you have. And Portland has had Bjorklund and Purston. And they found Woodside. I mean, he's been playing for a while with that team, but his level of commitment is totally the wrong word. Level
involvement.
Of involvement is totally the correct word.
He's been committed the whole
time.
Right.
I was just totally blanking there.
Yeah, I mean, his usage rate's gone way up for sure. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see, again, how that team holds up going through the end of the season, whether them doing what they do continues to work as we get down to the end of it. I do think that my expectation is whichever team comes out of the West is going to be stronger than the West Coast teams that we've seen in the past. I think we're in for a good championship matchup for sure.
I hope so.
No matter which one. Let's look at the East Coast then now. So East Coast, big weekend for Boston on the road, two games, one in Philly, then one in New York. I was at the Philly game. You were at both games.
Yep.
Calling them. And so they dropped the game to Philly, which was close pretty much all the way through, right up until the very end of the game.
Yeah, and neither team rolled off more than two consecutive goals against the other. And the interesting thing about that game is in the first half, the two teams combined for 16 goals. In the third quarter, the two teams combined for 17 goals.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it really got out of hand quickly.
It loosened up, as they say. The game opened up.
It was a very strange thing to witness, and it's not the first time that has happened between those two teams, where the third quarter just seems to be this space that they fill with goals on goals on goals, and they're for the most part just holds, not so many breaks in the third quarter.
Yeah, is it an offensive correction that's happening at halftime, and then it takes the defense a little time to catch up on that? Is it? What's making that happen?
My instinct is to say that it is a matter of the offense figuring out exactly what they want against what the defense is doing and saying, yeah, this is working, and having enough time to say, this is working, this isn't working, we want to stick in with this and sort of put those cards on the table and say, yeah, that's what we're doing. Do they have an answer?
Mm-hmm.
And so far, neither team has really been able to play the same level of defense in the third quarter. And we see generally with Boston, we've talked about this before, but they're consistent over all four quarters, whereas Philadelphia lags a little bit in the third and fourth quarters. In this particular game, the fourth quarter was when they pulled away a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, and sort of toward the end of the fourth quarter, they kind of closed it out, which is something that you have to be able to do if you want to go on and win this league.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they haven't been able to do in the past. So for Philly, that's a nice note to take away from this game.
Yeah.
Their ability to close that game out was big. And that puts them one step closer to home field advantage. Basically, at this point, I think if Boston loses or Philly wins another game, that question is settled as well. And we'll be playing a playoff game.
As far as I understand, I'm not the total best at figuring those.
Yeah, I don't do all the tight scenario math, but that's what I'm hearing. We're going to leave it at that for now. We might be wrong. Someone will correct us. That'll be fine. So then Boston goes up to New York, which I'll say one thing before. So I watched that game. It was just a single camera game for us, but it was a really well done single camera game, I thought, and I actually really enjoyed watching it. I find if the camera work is good, which it clearly was in this game.
Give a shout out to Dana for the camera work.
Yeah, Dana, fantastic camera, and he understands the game too.
Yeah.
So. When he'd push the camera up forward and move the disc all the way over to the left side of the screen if they were going left to right, unless a cut came back for the dump, in which case he'd shift backs and catch that person in the corner of the shot. I just thought he'd capture that really well. And then with you being able to be on the mic there, big help, having good talent, you and Poster out on the mic. And I really enjoyed watching the game.
It
was fun.
I think the key is that Dana's one of the guys that we also, like during halftime, we talk about how the game's going, what we expect to see. We talk about Ultimate in general. So it's good to get that interplay between all the folks working together. And one of the interesting things about the single camera game is we have time in halftime to just sort of sit and pause, whereas we don't have that during the other ones where we continue doing things throughout the half. But during the single cam, there's no time to break during the entire first and second quarters.
Yeah.
You're just talking.
Yeah, because we're not going to commercial.
Yeah.
We don't have the replays during that. Halftime, back at the studio, they roll in highlights, right? So you get a break.
But we don't see that.
Yeah, but you get to relax
yes.
while some highlights play for the folks at home to enjoy
while
you take a break
talking. We could actually watch that on the stream, I suppose, while we're sitting there, pull it up on the phone or something. I hadn't considered that.
You could. You'd have like a little bit of a lag, I think, from what happens, but you definitely could.
Well, I wouldn't use it as the cue to get back
in.
It's just I like to see the plays of the week, the offensive player of the week, defensive player of the week,
Those have been fun, by the way, the West Coast and East Coast Player of the Week, the new content that the team is producing here.
You've got Poster doing some of the voiceover for that,
sounds
like. Yeah, a
little voiceover work from Poster.
Unless you're just having somebody mimic his voice.
I don't think anyone can mimic his voice. It's a very, very individual.
One of the reasons that was such an interesting game is that New York went on a 5-point run and a 4-point run against the Whitecaps in the first quarter. I mean, in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
So one was in the first quarter and then in the second quarter. And Philadelphia hadn't been able to do that, as far as I can tell, all season.
No.
And what is it that New York was doing? Is that something that other teams are going to be able to learn from, both Philadelphia and whoever they'll face in the Western Conference Final? I mean, if Philadelphia goes on, it doesn't matter. But if Boston then goes on, is there a lesson that can be learned from what's happening in that early run? One of the things that I'll say is that New York was attacking consistently and quickly, and they were doing it at pace and not just giving the disc back to the Whitecaps. If you get a turnover from Boston you need to convert.
You need to go to score.
Because, yeah, if they get it back, they're not that likely to give you a second chance. There were a couple points in that game that were a little messy, but on the whole, don't re-gift.
Yeah, and it's something that New York hadn't been doing all that well this year, so I think this is a great thing. Even though New York wasn't able to hang on and win this game, they kind of fell off a little bit, particularly in, toward the end of the game. But there's definitely a takeaway here for them. The way that their D-line was able to convert is huge.
Yeah.
And is something that they can build on without question going into next year.
And of note in that game also is that both Boston and New York scored more breaks than holds. Boston scored 13 breaks, 9 holds. New York scored 9 breaks and 7 holds. As far as in the quick talk that I had with Luke, the stats guy, stats maven, he was almost 100% certain that that had never happened before. And I wouldn't be surprised, because it's unusual to have more breaks than holds for a losing team, let alone for both teams.
That is very strange.
Yeah. And then, so the aggregate score to compare from East Coast to West Coast. The East Coast was, the winners were Philadelphia and Boston, and they aggregated for 46 points. And the losers, which were Boston and New York, were 37. So 46 to 37 between two games. And the West Coast, it's 47 to 22. So the difference isn't in the winning teams, it's in the losing teams.
Yeah. Yeah, scoring the same amount kind of on the winning level, but we're definitely seeing, I think, New York, I mean, they went out and they beat San Francisco. They're a solid team. They, you know, certainly young, certainly need some development work, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them be a very good team in 2017.
Yeah.
A much improved team, at least. So, in the end, best guess is playoff game in Philadelphia, Boston and Philly, playoff game in Portland with Seattle coming down there. But we'll see how it shakes out, and we'll know a lot more after this weekend. And so for the weekend, you know, you have D.C. going up to Boston and playing. You have then D.C. will go down and play Philly on Sunday.
Yep.
And then on the West Coast, San Francisco will go to Seattle on Saturday, then they'll go down to Portland on Sunday.
And then we've got New York and Vancouver are on bye weeks.
Bye weeks this week. The other fun thing that we have going on this weekend, though, is something that we need to talk about. And that is the Boston Area Women's All-Star Game, which is actually really cool. We're doing a game up in Boston, doubleheader game this week. So if you're coming out to the Boston Whitecaps game, or we're planning to, be sure to check out the tickets for the women's game, which will take place before. So we have a 4:30 game, and that's when we'll have the Women's All-Star from the Boston area, the Women's All-Stars play. And then the Whitecaps game will be on at 7:30. The cool thing about that too is that we're going to be covering this with MLU Live, and you and I are actually going to be calling this game, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
We've been looking through the rosters today, a lot of great players on there from multiple club teams. I will say that we have to give a shout out to Brute Squad though. They have been the main partner that we've been working with to put this together, with the help also of Christian Foster, thanks to him. And by the way, he had a great weekend this weekend for the most part.
8 assists, 1 game.
Yeah.
That'll do.
That's pretty good.
Many of them were hammers, blades over the top. Really like to see players that have enough confidence to just deliver the disc that way.
Absolutely. And the thing is I was watching the whole game, and I just didn't really realize what he was doing.
We didn't either.
And then I got to the end, I was like, wow. And I realized also that sometimes I talk to players a lot about, like, I've been talking to him about this game, right? Or I talk to other players about rules or this. I seldom go up to a player and say, you're really good at Ultimate. And I feel like I need to do that next time I see Christian. He knows it. I don't need to tell him. He knows it, but it wasn't surprising to me, but it jumped out this weekend.
It's not necessarily in either of our natures to be overly complimentary.
It isn't.
No, complimentative.
Compliment.
We don't give that many compliments.
Indeed.
Including to ourselves.
Also true. But now and then you should do it. And I feel like this is there's a good case to be made for that one here. So
yeah, so the women's All-Star game up there will have players from Brute Squad, Slow White, Siege, and Wildcard. So that's two women's teams, which are Brute Squad and Siege, and two mixed teams, which are Slow White and Wildcard. And all of those teams have had success at their respective levels. So Siege is only in their second season.
Hmm.
And Brute Squad just won the club national championship last year. Slow White has had a history of success over the last, as long as I can remember them existing, which is, I want to say 10 years or so, or maybe longer. And then Wildcard has sort of jumped into the scene in the last couple of years. So the success that they've had up there indicates that they have a lot of good players. And from the players that I have seen, primarily from Brute Squad, I have not seen as much mixed ultimate as I have for men's and women's ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, I have to cop to that right away.
Yeah, just, let's admit,
I only not have so much bandwidth.
Yeah. And you watch more Ultimate than is reasonably good for you, as is.
I'm not sure if it's better for me or for Ultimate that I watch that much Ultimate. But yeah, there's a lot going on there.
There's a lot happening.
So they'll be splitting up into two separate teams, and they'll be playing sort of a mix of club rules and MLU rules.
Yep.
So they'll have a 10-second stall count rather than the shorter 7-second stall count with MLU.
Though they will be counting it, so it may end up being about the same length of time. As we've said before, as we joked about.
Things. It takes you 10 counts to get to 7.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they'll be playing by quarters instead of two halves, and they'll be playing to timed quarters rather than to point halves.
Yeah, that's the kind of nod to the MLU format. Yeah. And, you know, the conversations we had about it were interesting because we talked about the difference between sort of playing a club game that's more about the players and how they play and playing a game in front of fans.
Yeah.
And they were excited to put something in front of fans. And we felt like the time game would be a little bit better for fans. Give some breaks. You can do some little games and stuff that we do and kind of make it a thing.
And here's one of the things that I didn't realize until I've been involved with MLU is that those end of quarter plays are just exciting.
So much fun.
They force you to just put the disc up and see what happens. And that's what happens in just about every other major sport. You run out of time in NBA, NFL, not Major League Baseball, obviously. You run out of time in hockey, although it's a little bit different. But even in soccer, time is a factor. And so you have to rush and do things out of character at the end. And that sometimes produces some of the most exciting plays in each one of those sports.
Absolutely. And anytime you're forced to break with what you normally do or what you want to do, it creates excitement.
Yeah.
And drama. And that's that stuff's all fun. So they're going to do that time game. They are going to play on a club-sized field. So we're setting up a field that's a little bit different. And people will be able to see that when they tune in.
It's 40 yards wide, 70 yards long, 20 yard end zones.
Thank you. I always forget the dimensions. So instead of being 53 yards wide, 80 yards long with 20 yard end zones, we're 40 yards wide, 70 yards long, 20 yard end zones.
Well, let's be clear. It's 53 and a third.
It is
yards in.
I never did figure out why that was 53 and
a
third.
Well, so it makes sense.
We're matching a football field.
If you break it out into feet, the numbers make a lot more sense.
If
you think of it in yards, which gives you smaller numbers, it doesn't make as much sense.
Does not make as much sense. Okay, I'm with you. We're going to do it in feet from now on.
And then no one will know what size thing you're
running. No one will have any idea what we're talking about. Yeah, I mean, so the game is going to be, I think, very good. They're splitting up into old versus young.
Ah, a classic club frisbee split in practices.
Classic practice split. Yeah. Remember we used to do we'd line up, it was old versus young, and you'd line up from youngest to oldest, and then it was lightest to heaviest we did.
Number of Heckmans.
Number of Heckmans.
That you weighed by. Standard unit of measurement, 150 pounds equals one Heckman.
Yeah, Dan Heckman, 6 feet, 150. That's one Heckman.
And we'd line up by smartest to dumbest, depending on what the category was.
Yep.
Most flick to most backhand.
Yep, yep.
Fastest to slowest, tallest to shortest. Any number of things.
Any number of things, and just divide it right in the middle.
How much food you would eat before practice versus after practice. We had some people that wouldn't
I don't
eat
remember
beforehand.
That one. I never ate before.
Joel Wooten wouldn't eat before tournaments.
Joel Wooten ate all of the
things.
But
then he would eat everything afterwards.
All of the things.
Whatever was left over.
Just
like.
He had to
I would
the
too if I hadn't eaten all day. So you just come up with creative ways to split folks up.
And I know that the people over at Brute Squad were kind of figure out a creative way to split these teams up and went through a bunch of iterations. And it was the old young that gave them, I think, the best competitive matchup.
Yeah, and I'm going to say by looking at the rosters and the players that I am familiar with, it looks like it should be a competitive game. And I look forward to seeing. So. One of the things that happens when you play against your teammates is you're familiar with them. You know, when you play against an opponent who isn't familiar with you, you can sort of use your top-level moves because your opponent isn't used to seeing it every week.
Yep.
But when you play against people that you're that familiar with, you got to go to next. You're like, they're baiting you on that move. They're going to try to set you up for a block.
Right.
So we'll see what happens next.
I think it's going to be really interesting. I think it's going to be a really fun game. I'm excited to call it.
Yeah.
We're also going to have in the booth with us a special guest commentator.
Tell me more.
Rosalind Agnew. And I apologize, Rosalind, if I mess up your name. I've only read it, not heard it out loud. So, but she is very involved in the Boston Ultimate scene. She's been the coach of the Boston College women since 2006 and has played competitively for Slow White and also for Lady Godiva.
One of the hallowed teams.
Oof. Legendary.
Not even. Just in Boston, but in all of Ultimate. Very consistent vertical stack attack back from Lady Godiva. They were one of the teams that sort of showed how brutalizing that attack can be, where it's just, oh, this is what we're going to do, and you can't stop it because each player has two-way options. You have a resets close to the disc early on. They paved the way and showed a lot of what strategy can do for you in Ultimate if you stick to it and do it as a team.
Yeah, so we're going to expect her to have a lot of insights.
No pressure.
No pressure, but you should be super smart about Ultimate for us.
That's good. That's exactly what I need in the booth.
Yeah.
I need somebody to challenge me on the crazy
thing. I'm just hoping that you guys get in an argument of some sort. I would really
enjoy
that.
That'll be good,
that.
Because then we can just cut you out of the broadcast.
I can take a rest. It's going to be a long day. We're going to call that game. We're going to call the Boston Whitecaps DC Current game. After that, you should all tune in.
Yeah.
If you can't get to Boston and go to this game, because you should definitely get to Boston and go to this game if that's a possibility for you.
Yeah.
Buy your tickets, get out there, cheer this on. It's going to be fantastic. There's tailgating at Boston in between the games, all sorts of fun
before
things.
Before the games,
do.
Based on what
before
we've seen
the games.
In the other weeks.
Yeah, it'll be a great time. So if you're in the Boston area, get there. If you're not, tune in to MLU Live. Go to MLULive.com.
Yep.
4:30 start for the women's game and a 7:30 start for the Whitecaps game. And then we'll also, of course, have all of our other games live streamed as usual. Did I say live screamed?
You did, but I was just going to let that slide. And
we're going to try live screaming again.
I don't have the pipe for it.
it'll be an off-season thing. We'll practice it.
One of the things that always comes up when we're doing audio levels is I have a tendency to speak very quietly. And then occasionally during the games, I peak.
And
it doesn't come out well all the time.
Yeah, you don't want a lot of dynamic range in an announcer. You want kind of a steady.
That's rough for me.
Yeah, I know.
I'm learning.
You're very dynamic.
I'm learning.
I mean, everybody says that about you. I hear.
So then this will also be the first weekend that I'll be covering three games in one weekend.
Oh, is this the most?
So I'll be going down to the game the very next day with the DC team down here to Philadelphia. So we'll see how my stamina holds up.
You may lose your voice.
No, I don't speak loudly enough.
That's true.
We just covered that.
You are like you're like the NPR of sports answers.
Using too many words.
Get you close to the mic and have you talk very softly.
Well, yeah, I always have to put that little microphone right next
just
to the,
tuck it right
next
in.
To the mouth. But then I have to make sure I don't have too much beard so it gets the fuzzy sound in there.
Yeah.
These are all things I've learned over the past 2 years.
It's the details. It's all in the details.
So then the next thing, I mean, we're at our 50th episode.
We are.
So 50. That means that MLU has been around for 50 episodes of this.
It is one way of measuring how long MLU has been around. It's a
rough measuring stick.
It's a very rough measuring stick.
Because the distance between pods on a given week or a given month or a given year
sometimes,
can vary.
Sometimes very lengthy. But been around a while now. And we were talking today about some of the things that stick in your memory about this league, because you know you've been here from the beginning.
Yeah,
I've been here from
before
the beginning.
Right, arrived at the same phrase there. I can't.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. And so there, you know, we were thinking back, just and this will be just a dipping the toe in the waters of nostalgia here. We're not going to get carried away with all the little bits and pieces. But what are a couple things that you remember that particularly?
Well, it's interesting. The very first thing was that there were rules changes.
Yeah.
And literally, I mean that the rules were changing. They were different. They were not only different from the AUDL, but they were different from club and all of that. So the idea that we're looking at rules changes and changing the way that we're playing the game a little bit, shortening the stall count, allowing players to move after picks and calls and things like that, and sort of showing that double teams can be legal without totally breaking the game, like many, many people were afraid of. That was the very first thing that I remember about being involved. And then being involved with the teams and watching the tryouts, being able to go to different teams' tryouts and seeing players from different club teams compete against each other, where like a man who plays mixed versus a man who plays men's, you don't get to see them compete directly. Mm. And one of the things I've appreciated the most is seeing that some of the, this isn't to say that I had the wrong assumptions that men who played mixed were worse. It's just that proving both to the players and to the fans and to everybody who's watching that there are top level players playing at all types of different competition, and putting them together on teams, getting that cross-pollination of ideas and methods and practices on the field, that's been one of the things that has throughout this process of being involved with the MLU has just been, it's kind of mind-blowing for me. It's like, oh, we're all bringing it together here. We can figure out how all of this works. We can test the boundaries. I like that a lot. And I thought the midfield pull rule was going to be dumb. I've come around on that. I like the midfield pulls so much that I think there's a chance that we should always pull from midfield or from somewhere closer than the end zone because I like the drama it creates.
I've often thought that a shortened pull would be better. Yeah. You look at the NFL, they don't kick off from the from the opposite goal line.
Right.
Right? It makes some sense to me. But that's a bigger picture. We have a few rules things that we're going to talk about, but we'll put those in a later episode.
Yeah.
So what else you got?
Well, the other things are just sort of sports nerd kind of things where mm-hmm. I can go back and watch all of the games in MLU. If I want to go find something from a game, I can go back and watch that game. And with the way the box scores are kept now, which is better than the way that they were kept before, and go back and look at the stats, I can see how the game progressed and what the score was with the line graphs. I can see how many breaks in different quarters. I can see all of this information that if you go back and try to watch club games, you don't have any of that ancillary information. So you have to figure it out yourself, which I spent a lot of time in the MLU offseason doing. And I just appreciate that I can go back and find it. Now, there's still stuff that I want to pull from those games that isn't in box scores, and that's the way it works. But the fact that we're showing all of this and just putting it out there and letting people see it. And then the final thing that I'll mention, which is the like personal bit, it's like I can go hear my own voice on Comcast in Philly. And that's really something that I never thought would be a thing. I never thought of myself as someone who would do announcing, and I enjoy it, and it showed me something that I like to do. It's nice to find more things that you like to do. I seem to be good enough at it that you keep having me back. So, you know, hopefully true. I'll get to do more of that. But, you know, I turned just this past Tuesday, I watched a game with my dad that was broadcast from a while back or from the week before on TCN Philly, I guess, is the way that I'm supposed to officially the Comcast Network,
yeah. Philly, Mid-Atlantic as well.
And it's just that's me. Talking
on the TV.
I'm on the TV, and my nephews, who are like 2.5, 3.5, in that sort of range, they like to listen to it and hear me on the broadcast. And I think that's really cool.
That is very cool. That is very cool.
So, how about you? What things stick out to you from all of this time you've poured into MLU?
There's so much stuff, and you know, it's going to be interesting. And we're going to do a little bit more of this in kind of our postseason wrap up thing,
for sure.
Because this is something that, when I'm in the season, I feel like I don't notice things as much. So we had a
100%.
Billy Sickles made a great catch in the game on Saturday, and that was on ESPN, top 10 last night.
The Sports Center.
Yeah, so it'll be the night before because this will come out Thursday, but it's Wednesday today. It was on last night and on today. And, you know, I didn't even know it was on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of crazy. For years, it was up to me to answer those emails from ESPN, to communicate with them, to give them permission to use clips, to send them the clips, all that sort of stuff I did for a long time. Or, you know, Jeff did, or we worked on this very, very directly. But now Garrett took care of all that. He posted it, he sent it over to ESPN, he gave them permission when they reached out to want to use the clip. I was in New York traveling, didn't get back till really late, went right to bed. And I came in this morning and saw Matt Gray. He's like, ESPN. I was like, oh, really? And it was exciting. I'm always excited when we get on. It's always a nice thing, right? But it feels like I expect us to be there now. Like, I expect that we belong there now. And so it's not the same as it was when we had that first clip where Sean Murray's crazy. I don't want to catch it up here. Instead, I'm going to fall on the ground and then pluck it out of the air just before it touches the turf.
Was that that game? It was against the current.
Against the current. And that's going to be so much more exciting. And he was right. And that was our first clip. And I remember when they asked for that clip, we sent it in, and then you just sit and watch and the TV. And we didn't really know at that time when ESPN sort of turns over their top 10. So I must have watched like 5 hours of SportsCenter as I waited for this to come on, and I go 11:45 that night, 11:50 or something like that. And sure enough, it was on TV, and that was so visceral, and exciting at that point. And I don't want to lose that excitement about it. I still have some of it, but right, it's not the same as that first year, that first time.
Because it's sort of a legitimization. It's more legitimate in a sense. It happens more often.
You got a Porky Pig thing going today where you start with a word and then you rewind. I like it though. It's good.
We all have our foibles.
Legitimizing, I think you could say.
So it's that thing where even if you're a successful team and you start winning more games and you start winning championships and you just start that level of success, it's not that you're not excited to win the next game. It's just that you expect it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is part of your job. You go out and win. One of the notes from that Sean Murray catch, the complaint that I had the first season as a GM when I heard from the players most is every time that Ultimate's on SportsCenter, it's against us. Every single big catch and every big play that was, and there was a magazine
there were
cover,
a number of them.
And it was always a player from the DC Current, just almost getting the play, but someone else making the big play.
Making the big play, yeah. I think, though, they've been saved from that by Del Rico, single-handedly.
And even on that note, the one other thing that I'll mention in terms of memory is that we were in the Washington Post the first year.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal for me because I still read actual newspapers.
Yeah.
And even more so then than now. But to see it actually in that gray and black print, it was just
this beautiful.
I'm used to seeing newspapers have sports in them. And now the team that I was involved in got into there. Thanks to Brian Flaherty, of course,
yep.
Who wrote the article. But it was just, that was nice. It was a world of difference.
It's a cool thing. And it takes stepping back sometimes to be able to see it. But it is very cool. The other thing that's developed over the course of these years is the kind of respect level on a whole is much different. So lately, I've had opportunities to be in rooms with very big brands, talking to them about our league and where we want to go. I've traveled to Detroit to go talk in rooms of people who run big companies with big budgets and who are interested in what we're doing. I've also had a couple opportunities to talk to people who are running much bigger leagues than ours, but who are interested in what we're doing in very specific areas.
That's more interesting to me.
And it's really fun. So there are these types of things are starting to we're starting to gain acceptance, and I think the sport as a whole, and this isn't just our work, ADL gets credit for this, USAU gets credit for this, all of the players out there are working everywhere from the people running petitions to get their middle school to start a team, all the way up throughout the ranks, get credit for this. The sport is gaining, over the last few years, leaps and bounds of respect versus what it had when I played.
Yes.
And it's just exciting to be a part of it, and it's exciting to see what we're going to do next. And so, we're only 50 episodes in. We got 50 more to go before we can get really excited about this.
Rush up to that 100.
Yeah, well, we're doing this more regularly now. It's going to come a lot faster. The first 50 took us 4 years. The next 50 are going to take us
a year. That sounds about right.
It's about a year.
We'll skip for deer accidents in between.
Yeah, there'll be some deer accident breaks, maybe a vacation here or there. You never know. But that is all the time we have for today. Dusty, as always, thank you. Thank you again to Heavy Seas. That was a delight.
I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's got a little fiery
taste. I finished it
and
I'm still enjoying it. Delicious beer. Plank 4. Check it out. And also a good time to have this. It's beer week in Philadelphia. So I feel like we're matching up nicely. Thanks everybody for joining us. You can get me, of course, at Nick Darling on Twitter, NIC Darling, or Dusty at Dust Tweeter, DustTweeter, or both of us at Cleats Cufflinks. And we'll see you next week.